Time to take a look at preparing your income tax returns. Larry Mueller here with my guest Steve Schmidt, a certified public accountant and managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. So if you have a tax question for Steve, I hope you'll join us. The number is 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Steve, welcome back.
Hi, Larry.
Great to have you with us.
Thank you.
A note from Chuck. An email. We're talking about emails. We've already gotten a couple of emails. And Chuck wanted us to mention the Endangered Species Act. That's a checkoff on our Wisconsin income tax form.
Yes, it is.
And Chuck had been in contact with Spencer Black, who assured him that any donations made on the state tax form are doubled by the state. So if you want to put some money in that, it's $10, it's $20 from the state, or $100, it's $200 from the state. So that's a good.
There are a number of checkoffs you can indicate on your Wisconsin return. So take a look at that. If you're interested, do so.
And you can use it the next year.
As a contribution deduction.
As a contribution deduction.
That's
worth worth mentioning. It's a good thing. I always put some money in on that one, and I hope everybody else does too. Joe in Franklin, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Joe.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Hi. My wife and I divorced. I guess my ex-wife and I divorced last year, and I've got some 1099s, state refund tax, things like that, plus interest, which has been reported under my Social Security number only, or has it? And if so, how do I split it so that she takes half of the interest income or refund income and I take half?
Sure. Wisconsin's a marital property state, and unless you entered into a special allocation agreement, which most people don't do, through the date of divorce, all of your items of marital income and deduction get split 50-50. Okay? Then after divorce, then just each spouse reports his or her own income. So what a good thing to do is to just prepare a schedule indicating these are our items of income and deduction through the point of divorce, and we split those 50-50. And then after that, then you each report your own. With respect to, for example, if you get a 1099 that reports the interest only to you, and for matching purposes, what you can do is report, let's say it's $100, and $30 should be reported by your ex-wife. You could report the $100 on your Schedule B, for example, for interest income, and then take a negative $30 as income of ex-spouse. But either do that or just do a separate schedule with your tax return laying all your income and deductions out, which is what we normally do. And then we usually put some type of identifier on top of the form, page one, to indicate your divorce, see marital property allocation schedules attached.
Is there a schedule for marital property allocation?
No. You have to make that up yourself. There isn't an official form.
Mm-hmm. And, I probably should have looked first, but do you know, and maybe you don't, whether or not something like TurboTax with electronic filing has any type of provision for that?
That I don't know. I don't use TurboTax at all, so I don't know what
the
capabilities are.
Sorry, we can't help on that one.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. And Jason, Minneapolis, it's your turn. Hi, Jace.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The reason I'm calling today is that my wife and I have both worked in the same place for the last 4 years, and the first 2 years we didn't have any trouble. We got great refund checks from the IRS, and the last 2 years we've owed. Now, when I found out I was going to owe 2 years ago, I actually started taking extra money out of my paycheck as an extra additional payment to the IRS, hoping that we would get a refund. I wouldn't have this onerous task of paying, the IRS a check. And I'm just kind of confused and concerned as to how we got there. I know my income has grown each year in terms of my salary, but we both claim zero, and I've just never heard of folks claiming zero, and we don't have any extraordinary either deductions or penalties, and I just wondered if you had a comment about that.
Do you have any other sources of income other than the wages?
No, we don't.
You don't?
Hmm. Boy, that is strange.
My guess would be is that one of your employers or both are not withholding per the tables. And what you could do is just go online. I think both of the withholding tables for are you in Minnesota or Wisconsin?
Minnesota.
Okay. Well, I know Wisconsin's withholding tables are online. I assume Minnesota you can get access to those, as are the federal circular for the withholding, and just go to the tables in there based on your frequency of payment and your salary range to see if proper amounts are being withheld.
Yeah. You don't happen to have two jobs, or one of you have two jobs and one just one job?
No, we each have one job.
Yeah. No. Okay. Because sometimes that could...
Right. Yes. If you have multiple places, you've got the more income, but the tax rates are graduated, as are the withholding tables. So if you have multiple employers, they wouldn't get the full graduation they should have with multiple employers.
Have you been taking this to a tax preparer?
No, I haven't. I've been using the H&R Block tax product online.
Okay.
And I used it all 4 years, so,
sure.
I mean...
Yeah. It might be worth going to a tax preparer, too, but I checked those tables. Steve's probably right. It may be that the employers just simply aren't taking out enough money.
Right.
Using the proper amount.
Well, thank you very much for taking the question and for giving me the advice. I'll check the tables. Have a nice day.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Jace. Appreciate it. Virginia in Brookfield, your turn. Hi, Virginia.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, my husband is in a nursing home. Can I deduct the entire amount of the bill or just the medical expenses?
Normally, when you're in a nursing home, pretty much the full expense will be deductible as a medical expense.
The amount that's taken out for room and board?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Steve, I was thinking back to that caller just before us as to what might have happened. If one of the wife or the husband was making considerably less than the would that make a difference? Possibly. Not enough to make a big difference.
I wouldn't think so. I mean, it's...
No. All right. Well, maybe something will come to my mind, but I can't think of anything. Gary in Cedarburg, your turn. Hi, Gary.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Morning.
My wife bought a hybrid car, a Prius, 2 months ago, and I've been, you know, in conversations with people that have said that the tax credit is still up in the air on that car, whether she's going to be able to take it on our tax return or not. And I was just wondering if you have an update.
You know, I don't. There's a whole list of vehicles that are eligible for the credit. I don't have that list with me, so I can't tell you. But basically, you know, as they sell out cars, you know, at first you get the full credit, then you get a reduced credit, and then once they've reached their max, it'll go away. And that's just a factual determination. I don't know where the Prius sits, and it depends upon when you purchased it, of course, as well.
So, yeah, you purchased it late in the year, so the percentage that you of deduction might be less than if she'd purchased it in January of the year, something like that.
Right. Or the credit.
Or the credit, sorry.
I see. So I guess we're going to have to, kind of on a daily basis, how will we find out what
it would be from the time that the purchase was made, so you should be able to go back and check maybe Prius, even, I mean, they the company that bought that sold the car might even have information on what the percentage is at any particular month of the year.
So it's based on when it was purchased, not when the tax is filed.
Right, and I don't have that research access with me, but I think if you go to irs.gov, they will have a listing there of the vehicles. And I've seen one. I just don't have it with me. And you know, there's so many different cars that I can't remember all of them.
Okay.
Well, you basically answered my question, because we weren't sure whether it was on the date of purchase or on the date of filing. So we'll be able to find out.
Just another, there's also, you use Form 8910 for that. And I believe those instructions will have a list of the vehicles.
Okay.
As well. So if you go to irs.gov, print off the 8910 and the instructions, it'll give you a list of everything there that's
super
eligible.
All right.
Super. Thanks for your help.
Yeah, thanks, Gary, for calling. Appreciate it. And you can join in, by the way, as well at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. I had a couple of open lines. Paul in Duluth is next, though. Paul, hello.
Hello. And boy, is this a timely show. I'm curious about the requirement for filing an income tax return to get the economic stimulus rebate. I have lived on Social Security disability as my only income for about 12 years, and I haven't had to file. Can I just file like a 1040EZ?
Yes, I can. Yeah, the IRS on last week, Friday, came out with a notice that it describes exactly what you do, and it's notice 2008-28. And if you don't have to file a tax return, you're not going to get the credit unless you do file a tax return for 2007.
Yeah, I understand that.
And here's the eligibility is, and you'll get half the normal credit. For a single person normally would get $600, you'll only get $300. Or on a joint return, instead of $1,200, you get $600. But if you have at least $3,000 of earned income, such as wages, Social Security, or certain veterans benefits, then you're eligible for that reduced rebate. What you need to do is file Form 1040A, complete everything on that form that is relevant for you. I mean, if you have some interest income, list the interest income, list your Social Security on the line for that. It won't be taxable, but list mm-hmm. the gross amount received, and then sign the form, and then at the very top of the form, the notice says you're supposed to write above Form 1040A, stimulus payment, okay? And then mm-hmm. that will get you the rebates once they start processing them in May or over the summer, depending upon, you know, when they get
when
to
they
yours.
So mm-hmm. so you actually have to write stimulus payment
right.
on the form?
The 1040A, yes.
At the top.
At the top.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks,
Paul.
You're
welcome.
Andrea in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question has to do with my husband and I guess we're married, obviously, and we filed jointly. Within the last year, we've undergone a lot of treatment for infertility. It's kind of not covered under our health insurance.
Yeah.
And we've spent a lot of money out of pocket. And I'm just wondering if any of that would be deductible on our income taxes or not.
As a medical expense.
As a medical expense.
So you've got, first of all, you got to add up all your medical expenses.
Mm-hmm.
Then medical is only deductible if it exceeds 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. So,
yes.
to use a real simple example, if you have $100,000 in total adjusted gross income, you multiply that by 7.5%, that's $7,500. Only the excess of your medical beyond $7,500 becomes deductible.
Okay. So this, I mean, I guess that with all of the treatments and testing and everything that we've gone through, definitely exceeds that. So as long as we take the seven, or what did you say it was?
You need to itemize your deductions.
Yeah.
And then add up all your medical expenses. Just mm-hmm. complete Schedule A.
Okay.
And list all your medical expenses. It'll walk you right through that 7.5% gross income limitation, and then it'll have you deduct the excess.
Okay. But those are?
That's deductible.
Yeah.
So if on Steve's example, so if you spent $8,000, mm-hmm. you'd have $500 to deduct.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
But I'm just wondering, I didn't know if something in that category would even be.
No, that'll count.
It will count?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for calling. And good luck to you, as a matter of fact. Appreciate it very much. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard let me know that the Prius exemption has now expired. There were a limited number of them for 2007, but not for 2008.
2008, they're gone, yeah. Okay, good. So again, the Form 8910 instructions will list all the vehicles and the credit that you might be eligible for.
Mike in Eau Claire, it's your turn next. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. I have a question about my daughter. She lived in Wisconsin for half the year, and now she's been living in Minnesota for the second half of 2007. And I'm going to be helping her with her returns, and I think everything will be fine on the federal return. But taking like the state tax in Wisconsin, for instance, where they ask you to list your federal adjusted gross income or whatever, and then they say, how much Wisconsin tax did you pay? I mean, it seems like, I don't know, I'm asking how income in two states and the state taxes you pay, like is the state tax she pays in Minnesota going to count in Wisconsin?
No. Basically what you do, for example, Wisconsin has a special form when you're a part of your residence. It's 1NPR. And what that form does, it lists all of your income from your federal return for the year. Okay.
Right.
And then what you do is you list how much of that was earned during the first part of the year while she was a Wisconsin resident.
Okay.
Then you go through the calculations, and it'll compute your tax correctly, and then you subtract only the Wisconsin withholding from the Wisconsin liability, which is only on the Wisconsin income.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. What was the name of that form again?
It's,
I'm sorry.
Wisconsin is 1NPR.
All right.
And
all
I assume Minnesota has a comparable form, but I don't know what that number is off the top of my head.
Will I be able to file that with, like, the easy form?
No, well, 1NPR is not there is a Wisconsin A and EZ, but that's 1NPR is not one of those forms. It's a longer form.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. And Michael in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Hi. What can we do for you?
I got a few questions to ask. Recently, about 2 years ago, I sold my business, and I was on a 7-year depreciation scale, and I only had the business for 4 years. And I made a profit on the business, and I'm wondering, when I do my taxes, because I haven't did them yet, I'm afraid about the capital gains because I made money on the sale. But
Let me just stop you once. You said you sold it a couple years ago.
Correct.
The business. So you're filing a tax return for 2005?
2006.
Or 2006. Okay. All right. Very good.
I did 2007 taxes, and I got a refund coming back.
Okay.
And they won't give it to me because they didn't do 2006. So now I'm doing 2006, but I don't want to do it, not knowing the correct way to do it, I guess. Or I guess the profit that I made on it, you know, I kind of... it wasn't a lot, but it was some. I'm just worried about paying capital gains or self-employment tax or something like that.
Sure. Were you an individual sole proprietor? Did you sell a corporation?
I was a sole proprietor.
Okay. Basically, when a sole proprietor sells his business, you got to divide the selling price of the assets among the components that were sold. Inventory, equipment, goodwill, whatever have you. And then each of those will get characterized based on the nature of the asset. For example, if you sold inventory for more than your cost, that would be ordinary income. On equipment, let's use an example. Let's say you had $100,000 worth of equipment that you had depreciated down to $40,000, all right? So your tax basis is $40,000. If you sold that equipment for $60,000, $60,000 less $40,000 is $20,000 of gain. Since that was depreciation you took, that comes back as ordinary income as depreciation recapture, all right? And you use Form 4797 to report that. And let's also say you had some goodwill, some self-generated goodwill, and you sold that for $25,000. That would be a capital asset, and that would be reported on Schedule D. So the character of the gain depends upon what you sold, and of course the amount of the gain is the selling price less your tax basis in the assets that you sold.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And one other question about a qualifying relative in Wisconsin. If I'm single and have people living with me the whole year and I'm supporting them, can I claim on my taxes?
Boy, I would need to know more about the relationship and all that.
Is it a daughter or a son or something like that?
It's a fiancé with her two kids. Yeah.
Okay.
If you go through the instruction forms, for example, on the federal and then the state, they have charts that walk you through, you know, yes or no, do you meet this requirement? Yes. Then you move on to the next one, do you meet that requirement? Yes. And then you go on to the next one, yes and no. And just walk through those, because there's so many variables, you know, whether you provide more than half the support and all that. So rather than try to go through that in the air, which would be very cumbersome, just get the 1040 instructions, the Wisconsin 1 instructions, and then walk through those flowcharts to see if you're eligible.
And that would be under qualifying individuals.
Well, it would be dependents.
Yeah, dependents, so under the dependents area.
Yeah, so if you take a look at exemptions for dependents, and then you go to the instructions.
And then they walk you right through it.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Good luck, Michaels. Appreciate your call. Gary and Merrill is next. Let's go to Gary. Hi, Gary.
Hello. I've got a couple questions on managed forest law lands that I've had logged off.
Okay.
And the there's a special cutting tax that's like 5 or 6% of the sale. And I was wondering if that tax is a deduction for off your regular federal and state income tax.
What type of tax is that? Is that a federal or a state?
Well, it goes to the state,
okay.
But it's like a you pay like 5 or 6% of your whatever the logs bring.
So if you sold $100,000,
you'd pay like $6,000 to the state, and that tax, I guess, is distributed back to the county in which it was logged.
So mm-hmm. It's a state tax.
I guess it is a state tax, but I was wondering if I can take it as a deduction against my federal and state.
I see.
I'm not familiar with that tax. I have had clients that have cut timber before, but I never remember that particular tax. So I don't know exactly what you're talking about. But just in general terms, are you treating the cut timber as capital gain income?
It would be a capital gain.
Yes. So the issue for you is whether that tax is going to be a reduction of your gain, or a separately, are you filing Schedule F as well for the timber activity?
I wouldn't know what schedule.
Oh, that's a farm schedule, where a lot of people that have timber will file and deduct their expenses on the Schedule F.
Yeah, I guess it would be. Yeah.
So I don't know exactly what that tax is, so I don't speak with any authority whether it would be a deduction as a business expense or whether it would be a reduction of the gain on the sale of the timber, because I just haven't come across that. But yeah.
Well, okay. Then the second question would be, I had certain expenses like for a forester to mark the trees and putting a road in for the loggers, but my regular income, I normally just take a standard deduction. Now, those expenses, are they deductible then?
You know, what I would suggest you do is you seek out someone locally who's good with ag tax issues.
Yeah.
Because you may have, I mean, if you're cutting roads, you may have some capital expenditures.
Sure.
But you may also have some ordinary deductions that you're entitled to claim. And that's why I asked you if you had filed Schedule F and you didn't kind of indicate, you didn't know what I was talking about. So I really think maybe you ought to consult with someone
locally,
your area, who deals with timber and agricultural type issues.
Yeah, that might be the best. Thanks, Gary, for calling. Appreciate it. Warren in Wauwatosa, it's your turn. Hi, Warren.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Good morning. It's that time of the year again. I've got a question. I'm retired. I have an IRA with an investment firm. I took money out throughout 2007. They withheld 12% for federal, 6% for state. But we didn't find out until January that instead of sending the money to the state, they sent it, almost all of it, to the federal.
Oh.
Yeah. So now it's too late to to change that. They can't get the money back, send it to state. What they propose to do, and they said that this has happened once before a long time ago, supposedly, that they will send me a letter. In fact, I've got a copy of it, that states that it was my intention to take the money out, that it was their mistake that they didn't distribute it properly. And they're suggesting that I send this an electronic copy of this letter with my TurboTax, with the e-filing, to the state. There shouldn't be any repercussions, but if there are, if I have to pay a tax penalty, the investment company will cover that.
Sure.
Is that some? And I also checked with the state. I called their line, their tax line, and they said that I wouldn't owe the penalty, which is, well, it's not the penalty, it's the amount of taxes I owe, mm-hmm. which is considerable, isn't due until April 15th.
Well, okay. Basically, both federal and Wisconsin require you to pay your tax throughout the year, either through
Correct.
Withholding or estimated tax payments.
Right.
If you have not paid enough in timely, Wisconsin will complete a Schedule U, and they will impose underpayment interest.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really a mechanical calculation. And you either have to have 90% of the current year's tax paid in. If you do that, you won't have an underpayment penalty. Or alternatively, if you have paid in an amount in excess of your 2006 Wisconsin liability, you won't have an underpayment penalty either. If you don't meet either of those conditions and you have more than $200 due, Wisconsin will likely impose an underpayment penalty. So what I would suggest you do is, if they want you to file that letter, I'm not sure that's going to do a whole lot of good, but go ahead and mail her on in. And then when Wisconsin, if Wisconsin assesses an underpayment penalty for you, give it to your company and have them reimburse you for the penalty.
Okay. And if I get that letter from the state, will that be a letter from the state at some point in
yes.
the future where they're,
right.
they're going to realize what happened?
Yeah.
And they're
gonna... their computers automatically compute this. If there's not enough tax paid in
they automatically...
during the year, it goes through the calculations on each and every return, and it spits out a notice that you did not include an underpayment penalty on your return. We find that you owe $75, and they'll send you a bill for $75 or whatever the number might be.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a larger number.
Oh, yeah, I'm just
yeah.
yeah. Do you have any idea when they might? I mean, if I've electronically filed this week, when I might get that letter?
Would it be after
April 15th?
I would guess anywhere between 6 weeks and 3 months down the road, probably.
Okay.
It's. I mean, you know, they've got hundreds of thousands of returns they're processing, and they can only do so. Are you using tax processing software to do your return?
Yes. Use TurboTax.
Okay, just indicate on the software that you want to compute any Wisconsin underpayment penalty that might be due, and it may generate the Schedule U for you, so you'll
okay.
know the dollar amount right when you prepare your return. I'd be surprised if TurboTax wouldn't compute that for you.
Okay.
And actually, it seems that they have, because I saw what I owed, and then when I got to the end of the state, I owed more. There was a penalty.
Yeah, there you go. That's exactly it. And it's,
okay.
Yeah. So, okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Warren. Good luck. And Miles in Wanakee, it's your turn. Hi, Miles.
Hi. Hear me okay?
Yes. Go ahead.
This concerns a 1031 exchange. I need to know an idea of what the correct basis should be. So here's the story. Received a property valued at $500,000, and it had a basis with it of $25,000. Okay, exchange it for a like-kind property. No problem there. Ended up being a bad deal and sold it for $130,000. I'm going to assume that the basis for tax purposes would be $25,000. That's what we could apply against our gain of $130,000, and we'd pay the tax on the difference. Is that true or not?
If on the original exchange, the $500,000 property you received, okay,
mm-hmm.
if you gave up property with a basis of $25,000,
mm-hmm.
and it was even up, your
yes,
basis,
even up.
It would
yes.
be it would be $25,000. But let's okay. say on that property, you acquired a larger property in replacement of the old property you relinquished.
No, it was exactly the same.
It was exactly the same. Okay, then the basis would just carry over,
and
you're exactly right, it'd be $25,000.
That's what I needed to know.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Miles, for calling.
Yeah, just make sure that it was eligible property for a like-kind exchange. I mean, it has to be property used in a trade or business or held for investment or rental. It can't be personal use property. That's not eligible for a like-kind exchange. So, but if it was a you know, an eligible property back then the basis does carry over.
Okay. Rail, I believe, is next in Madison.
Hello.
My name is Rao.
Oh, Rao, sorry.
I have a question. I filed my taxes and I got my refund both from state and federal. And I have some mutual funds. And the first statement from the mutual funds did not include one of the funds returns.
Okay.
And they sent me the statement after I got this tax refund. Now, what I should do?
Okay.
All right. So you included your tax return. You prepared and filed your tax return for 2007 before you had all your information.
Yeah.
And now you received another 1099 reporting additional income to you. What you should do is file amended returns. You do that by filing federal form 1040X and Wisconsin form 1X.
Okay.
And report that extra income?
Income and pay the tax due.
Pay the tax due. Pretty straightforward.
Yes.
All right. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. And we'll go to Steve, I think, is next in Wausau. Steve, hello to you.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I tuned in maybe 15 minutes ago, so I'm not sure if you covered earned income credit. But basically, my son is on his own now, and he made some money last year in the $8,500 range, and they didn't withhold very much. And I was going through the 1040 Easy and the Wisconsin Z forms, and it appears, and I just want to check my accuracy on this, is it possible you could actually get more money back than you actually gave up, I mean, that you actually paid into the on the withholding?
Yes. If you're eligible for the earned income credit, that's a possibility. And then for certain taxpayers, there's an additional child tax credit. Sometimes that's refundable.
It would have been a single filer. That's another question. A single filer can get the earned income credit?
Yeah, well, under limited circumstances. The earned income credit is not a credit that I work with regularly. But if you go to the Form 1040 instructions, there's about 10 pages of text there. That there's flowcharts that just walk you through the eligibility and then walks you through the computations. So I can't really help you out with that in the radio other than guide you to the instructions. And you just got to, you know, walk your way through it and determine your eligibility for the credit for your son.
I guess I pretty much followed it like three times now. And I guess you answered the question. You literally can get more back than you actually paid in.
That's the whole concept of the earned income credit.
Thank you.
Yep,
all right,
exactly.
Thanks. Joanne in Oak Creek, hello.
Oh, hello, gentlemen. I think my question is going to pertain somewhat to the second caller, but I didn't get to hear his answer. My husband and I have incomes that are very similar, and we have additional money taken off each paycheck to try to prevent owing a lot when it comes to tax time. And what seems to hurt us is when you add our incomes together, we get pushed up into like the next bracket or two. And I'm not sure if there's anything that, you know, we've got no dependents, you know, we're able to pay our property tax in full, you know, at the end of the year. It's not a significant amount, so we were able to itemize this year though with payments for, you know, charities and contributions, things like that. But is there anything else that we could take a look at so that we don't have a net O at tax time?
You can. I mean, obviously, you want to take all your deductions to minimize your tax appropriately.
Right.
But then, to the extent you have more tax due than withholding, you can do two things. You can go to back to your employer or employers and request them to withhold an additional amount.
Okay.
Or you can make quarterly estimated tax payments by using Form 1040 ES or Wisconsin Form 1 ES.
1 ES. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. And would there be, they may be able to take their money, and is there some tax-deferred annuity type?
Well, sure. If they're not taking advantage of 401ks, or if they work for a charitable organization, tax-sheltered annuities, or state government deferred, non-qualified deferred compensation plans, those certainly, assuming you have the financial capability to do that.
To do that,
makes a lot of sense.
Yep, it does. Thanks, Joanne, for calling. Teresa in Ironwood, Michigan. It's your turn. Hi, Teresa.
Oh, hi. I'm calling about that stimulus payment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm on Social Security, have no taxes to pay or anything, but I sent my form in already. Okay. Without the
stimulus payment.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So what do I do? Revise form?
I don't know what to tell you. But in the notice doesn't give any guidance there. Ellerin says, in the blank space at the top of page 1 of Form 1040A, eligible individuals should write the word stimulus payment above the title of the form. Mm-hmm. Now, the IRS obviously is going to get the form. Mm-hmm. They're going to process it. I would suspect that, it would be okay, but I don't know for sure. And I don't know what to tell you. You know, if you wanted to just make another copy of it and indicate, write stimulus payment on there and just do a little cover letter that I filed this before notice 2008-28 came out, and I didn't write stimulus payment on it. I'm just filing another copy with the proper notation.
That'd be worth sending
that
in.
Probably, it just cost you another postage stamp. That's about it.
Oh,
and
good.
We'll see what the government does with it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Teresa. All right, Bob in Cottage Grove, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Hey, I got a quick question on when one refinances a home loan or land loan. There's a refinance charge and there's also an appraisal charge. Are either of those deductible?
This is your personal residence?
Yes.
No. If you pay points or loan origination fees on a refinance, those can be amortized over the term of the mortgage and deducted as interest. But if it's just the appraisal and an application fee and some title insurance,
unfortunately,
and recording fees, that's a personal expense and not deductible.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks for calling. Jim in Wanakee, it's up to you next. Hi, Jim.
Hello, good afternoon. Say, I have a question. I appear to be in somewhat of a pickle with regard to some 941 taxes. Back in 1996 to 1998, I incorporated as a small consulting firm in another state, and I was paying taxes quarterly for the wages I was paying to myself as the sole employee.
Mm-hmm.
And for the past couple of years, I have received letters for two tax periods back for 1998, and they indicate that I owe them some taxes as well as obviously some penalties, and interest have accrued on those. And when I first received the letters, I sent a letter back indicating the business was closed and I had no assets. And I received the same letters a year later, and I sent back another response indicating the same thing. And now I received another one.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just looking for some guidance. Is
sure.
it something for a tax attorney or an accountant?
Well,
or?
Let me just talk in generalities to start with. You used a corporation, and generally you use a corporation to protect yourself from liability, okay?
Yes.
However, when it comes to trust fund taxes, the withholding taxes, for example, there's a provision in there that if you're a responsible person and you don't pay over those taxes, the corporate shield does you no good. There's personal responsibility for that.
Okay.
So, and if you were that responsible person, the corporate liability shield is not going to protect you. So if you withheld the taxes, didn't pay them over, you're probably going to be liable. I don't know of a way out there. So I don't know if there's any way, if your financial situation is precarious, you might consider offer and compromise. I just don't have the assets to pay this, but I can give you a little bit now, and I can borrow a little bit from some relatives if you consider that in full payment. There's procedures to do that, and you'd want to find a qualified practitioner.
And I have seen those. Obviously, on the Internet, you can find many websites that are willing to help you.
Sure.
Are there local references that you could suggest, reputable companies that could handle something like this?
Well, I think what you need to do is probably just find either a CPA or a lawyer who really regularly works in collections and offers and compromise or payroll tax issues. So,
okay, either an attorney or a CPA would be
sure.
advisable?
Exactly.
Okay, thank you for your help.
Yep, mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. Our guest today, Steve Schmidt, Certified Public Accountant and Managing Director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking, preparing your income tax returns today with Steve Schmidt of the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. Larry Mueller here, and we have one open line. So get in there at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And let's go to Lorraine in Eau Claire next. Lorraine, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I have a question about an adult child being a dependent.
Okay.
We have a son who is 27, and he has a mental health disability. Previous to this past year, he was somewhat independent, and he had some inherited money that supported him, plus he was able to hold a job part-time. In the past year, since the beginning of 2007, he had some difficulty, more difficulty than previously, was hospitalized a couple of times for care, and since January of last year, we have fully supported him. He did live for a short time in Minnesota, but we paid his rent and paid his bills and pretty much kind of took care of all of that, and continue to do so to date.
Sure.
So I'm wondering if for that year at least he might qualify as a dependent, and would it be an advantage to us in any way to or to him to declare that?
Sure. Again, when it comes to the dependency exemptions, the IRS instructions for line 6C it has a nice flow chart that'll help you walk through that. But if you have a child that is, you said, like 27 years old, the child will have to be permanently and totally disabled to be eligible to be claimed as a dependent under the child definition. And it sounds like you may meet that definition. But if you do, then in all probability, you might and you provide over half his support. He doesn't have any substantial income of his own.
Right.
You likely will be eligible to claim the child as a dependent. The definition of permanently and totally disabled, if you get to the IRS Form 1040 instructions, I'm not going to read it over the air here, but it's on page 17.
Okay.
So if you meet that, that'll take you to the next step in the charts, and he'd live with you more than half of the year. You can probably answer yes to that, and then, you know, is he and just walk you all through those different steps. But
sure.
If you meet the totally and permanent disability issue, you certainly will qualified. Likely find that he may be your dependent.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And now when you say permanently, I'm sure this is in there, but since I've got you on the line, I'll ask. When you say permanently, now we're hoping that with treatment he will eventually be at least somewhat independent, but he will still have the disability.
For now, he's permanent.
It would sound that way. But take a look at those definitions compared to your son's condition, and you'll need to make a determination of his status.
Okay. And do you think it's any problem that we didn't declare him in the past?
No.
Well,
no.
did for a time he was in college.
You know, and one of the other ones, you said you need to provide more than half of support. Well, you said he had another source of support that he was using that ran out. So
right,
it may very well have been appropriate for you not to claim.
Okay, well, just thank you so much for the information.
Yeah, thanks, Lorraine. And on to some more callers here. Let's go to Jeannie in Baraboo next. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, I'm wondering if I need to file taxes for my kids. They had been gifted some mutual funds a few years ago, and we cashed some of them in this year. So we got about $5,000 proceeds from them. But there's a capital loss on them. So do I need to file if they don't have any other income?
Should not. Basically, if a dependent child has more than $850 of gross income from unearned income sources, which would then you need to file. That would include...
So if the cost basis were over.
Yeah.
That
includes interest, dividends, and then gain from the sale of the securities. But if you had a loss, you wouldn't have any gain.
Okay, very good. And then I've got one more question with that. One of my kids had just a park and rec job, and so we filed federal to get his federal tax that had been withheld back.
Okay.
Do I need to file state tax for him then if he doesn't? He also had these mutual funds that were given, but they were a loss, didn't have any state income tax withheld. Do I need to file a state form for him?
How large were the wages?
A couple, $300 or something. Really minimal.
No.
Really minimal.
No. If you have... it's less than $850 of total income,
you're not gonna need to file. Yep, I kept reading that total income of $850, and I didn't know if that included, you know, the gross proceeds, but it's your profit.
It's the gain, right?
Yep. Okay, very good. Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Just to back to those tax incentives on wind and possible alternative fuels, somebody else noted that the House of Representatives will be voting as early as this week on a measure to continue federal tax incentives. So it's kind of up in the air for 2008.
Sure.
It's one thing to just to note. Ken in Wasaki, I believe, is next. So let's go there. Hi, Kenneth.
Good morning. I'm still with the stimulus package. I retired at 62. I'm 65 now, and I've been filing taxes on my pension every year, and I assume that would allow me to get that stimulus package, even though the reduction part of it.
If you're filing a tax return regularly, the IRS will use the facts on your 2007 tax return that you file to determine the rebate that you're entitled to. And basically, on a single return, it's the lesser of $600 or your tax liability. Or on a joint return, it's the lesser of $1,200 or your tax liability. In addition, if you have a child under the age of 17, you get $300 for each child.
Yes, because I use that TurboTax, and you said something about putting a stimulus package on a 1048, and I didn't know if I had to do all that if I did file tax.
No, if you're already – that's just if you were not otherwise – having to file, but if you normally file, the IRS will base it on your facts on your 2007 return.
Okay.
And let me just give you an example. Let's say that this isn't your situation, but let's say you have a husband and wife had no children in 2007, but they had a child in 2008. They won't get the $300 amount for the child, but when they file their 2008 return, they can claim the additional $300. Let's say the flip side is that you got more credit with the rebate than you were entitled to. For example, the rebate gets phased out with higher income. So let's say that the income on a joint return for 2007 was less than $150. So husband and wife get the full $1,200 rebate in 2008 based on 2007. But let's say on their 2008 return, they show $500,000 of income, and if that were the 2007 return, they would have received no rebate. That's fine. They get to keep the amount that they got, even though they wouldn't otherwise be eligible. So if you're entitled to more in 2008, when you file your return, you get more. But if you got paid more than you really should have based on your 2008 facts, you get to keep the excess.
Yeah, situation for sure with that much money. But,
no, but I mean, it's just... So yeah,
it's kind of interesting.
It's one of the rare times where tax law is stacked for you as opposed to against you.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That don't happen often.
That's right.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Kenneth. All right, we'll take a call from David in Madison next. Hi, David.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, sir, I have a federal form that I've never heard of before, and I've been doing taxes for many years, and it's Form 1099-B.
B as in boy?
Yes, that's for a sale of stock or bond or securities.
It's proceeds from broker and barter exchange.
Mm-hmm.
So that's from your...
So if you sold a publicly traded, if you sold a publicly traded stock, for example, let's say you owned 100 shares of General Motors and you sold it, you'll get a 1099-B reporting to you and the government the selling price for that stock.
Yes, what happened was we held some stock in the company and the company was purchased by another company.
Mm-hmm.
And the original company sent us a check. And then we got this form.
Sure.
And I don't know.
What you have is you got the selling price of the stock.
Yes.
You need to report that on Schedule D. And then, you know, show the date you acquired the stock, the date you sold it.
Schedule B?
D as in David.
Oh.
D as in David.
That's like capital gains?
That's the capital gains schedule.
Yeah.
And then you'll list the date of sale, the selling price, the date you acquired the stock, what you paid for the stock, and the difference will be gain or loss.
Yeah. Just wonder why they don't send us a regular capital gains report.
Because that's all the seller had was what it paid you for the stock. It didn't know what you had originally paid for the stock. So that you'll
that's
need to declare yourself.
Got it. All right. Good luck, David. Thank you. Eileen in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Eileen.
Hi.
I have a sort of a similar question following the caller. We're looking at selling a business which is a C corporation, but the purchaser does not want to buy the stock. So does it behoove us to liquidate the corporation and sell the equipment in a liquidation to us first, or just to sell everything inside the corporation?
You know, you're getting something that is perhaps very involved, and there's ways to minimize liability. So it's dangerous for me to advise. But with a C corporation, where the buyer is not willing to buy the stock, your best bet is probably just to have the corporation sell the assets to the buyer. And, you know, if there's gain, you know, the corporation will pay tax on that gain. And then when you take the liquidating proceeds out, you'll pay a capital gains tax on that. There's ways that you might want to look at to minimize that double tax. If you're, you know, entitled to take some salary out, you might use a covenant not to compete to have the buyer pay you part for that directly to you. But, you know, that really goes beyond what we can address on the radio. So if there's any significant selling price there, you should probably seek professional guidance.
Yeah, probably. Need to sit down with somebody and really go through this with a certified public accountant.
Absolutely, sure.
All right. Good luck, Eileen. Thank you. Steve Schmidt, certified public accountant and managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey, our guest here on the Ideas Network. Talking about your income tax return today with Steve Schmidt, certified public accountant and managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. Glad to have you listening in. Give us a call or send us an email if you have a question. And Steve, we do have an email from Alan in Madison who wonders about the income from the sale of various U.S. and foreign coins that he purchased more than 20 or 30 years ago. No longer has the receipts, so he can't establish a price basis or a date of purchase. He was paid a lump sum, $400 in cash, for everything together. So he also can't come up with each item's sale price. Any suggestions there?
Well, first of all, he has to report it on Schedule D of the tax return. And coins are one of the collectible items. So rather than being eligible for a 15% rate, the gain will be subject to a 28% rate. But of course, what is the gain is the question, right?
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know what he originally paid for it. And it's funny. There are some old cases out there where the IRS has taken taxpayers to task. It says, if you can't prove your basis, it's zero. And the IRS has won on those. But what I would suggest that he do is just do the best job he can to estimate what he paid for it, report it on the Schedule D, along with the selling price of $400, and compute his gain accordingly.
That's the best you can do.
Yeah,
I mean, what else could you do?
That's right.
All right. Chris in Milwaukee is up with a question. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I love your show.
Thank you.
Listen, I have kind of an unusual situation, I suppose. We run a summer camp, and most of our staff are seasonal. We have had a staff member request. She made $5,000. She requested to have 25% withheld, which includes the 7.65% that we naturally withhold for FICA. And so we paid her minus the 25%. The accountant, our accountant, mistakenly forgot to account for the full 25% and only accounted for the 7.65%.
Oh.
So her form showed how much she made, the $5,000, minus just withholding the 7.65%. So my question is, can I simply write her a check for the difference that we withheld that didn't get accounted for? And can she just go ahead and send that into the to the IRS, or will she be taxed for 2008, being paid in 2008?
Well, her W-2 would show the proper amount of the gross wages, all right?
Correct, yep.
And first and foremost, it would seem the best way to approach the have you paid over the withholding tax? You've paid over the Social Security tax, but let's say you withheld $1,000 of federal income tax. Have you paid over the federal income tax to the government?
I have, yes.
You have?
Yes.
Yes.
But if it didn't get reported on the 941s or W-2s, I'm not sure how you would have reported it. But assuming you have, then probably the best way to do it is just file a corrected form W-2.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. No, I paid the
7.65. But not the $1,000.
But not the $1,000.
Okay, and you didn't report it. What I'd be inclined to do is I would call her, mm-hmm. indicate that there was accounting mechanical error of not reporting the $1,000 withholding in our hypothetical example here on your W-2. And I'll give you two choices. I'll either amend your W-2 and I'll deposit it, or if I can just pay you back the $1,000, everybody's square where they should be, right? But I would, she asked you to withhold more, and in fact, you did withhold. I think I would, out of courtesy, go to her and ask her what she wants to do.
Okay.
It doesn't sound like there's any evil intent here. It's just there was a little processing problem and something didn't get communicated. But I would, W-2Cs are filed all the time. It's not a big deal. And if she's happy with just getting her $1,000 back, the government will get its money when she files her tax return. Nobody's been cheated, and I think you've got a good resolution of it.
Perfect. All right, that's what I'll do. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Tom in Eagle River, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi. See, I've got a question as a self-employed individual. You can, deduct your health insurance premiums, but there's a statement in the instructions of the 1040 that says the insurance plan must be established under your business.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what that means. I mean, I'm just...
Are you on your own?
Yes.
Yeah, and you have no employees.
There's no employees.
Yeah, I think you're fine on that. But let's... it's conceivable that you would do it on your own, not as a business expense, and not provide, if you had employees and not do it as part of the business, then it wouldn't be eligible. But I mean, everything you do there, you should be fine. And
so I would write the check out of my I would write my insurance premium check out of my business account.
That'd be fine, sure.
Mm-hmm. And as far as an HSA is concerned,
mm-hmm.
can I have one of those as well?
No, not if you have. In order to have HSA, you have to have a high deductible plan.
Okay. And say my deductible is $2,500.
Uh huh. So you're not gonna get both. You're gonna do the HSA, or you'll do the self-employed health.
One or the other.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Thank you much.
Thanks much for calling. And Bob in Stevens Point, hello to you.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Great program, great radio program in general, the network. At any rate, Steve, I got two IRAs that I closed out this year. They were brokerage accounts where I buy and sell stocks through them. And they were funded with after-tax dollars, so they're probably 20, 25 years old when IRAs first came out. I'm wondering...
You said when the IRAs first came out, there was no after-tax non-deductible. They were only deductible when they first came out.
Okay, you're correct. Okay,
yes.
And then later they...
The non-deductible alternative came along.
A couple years later. Okay,
mm-hmm.
All right. At any rate, I closed them out. Am I going to get a copy of something, a 1099 or something, from my brokerage account, from my brokerage firm? These were bought like two... brokerage firms ago. They were bought,
sure.
They were sold to new brokerage.
Let me ask you this. Did you make both deductible and non-deductible contributions or only deductible?
They would have been of one kind.
Only deductible then. Okay. So then basically whatever comes out is going to be taxable to you, and the company that paid you will issue a form 1099-R showing the distribution.
I have not received that yet. I was thinking I would.
Yes, you should. You may just want to call the IRA custodian to see if they have, in fact, been mailed out.
In any event, where is that? Where will that show up on what form?
That'll be on Form 1040. There's line 15A for IRA distributions.
Okay. And I'm thinking they were pretty small, $2,000 or what. I'm thinking I may have lost money after all these years. Is that going to come out in the wash?
Well, yeah, because basically you deduct what goes in, while it's in the IRA, you don't pay any tax on the income. And if you're only dealing with a deductible IRA, everything that comes out is going to be taxable.
Okay.
However, let's just say, use a simple example. Let's say you did a non-deductible IRA contribution in 2006 of $4,000, and you closed the plan in 2007 and only got $3,500 back. In that case, you do have a $500 loss that the IRS lets you claim as a miscellaneous itemized deduction. But that wouldn't be true. No, let's say that the example it was deductible IRA. You would have deducted the $4,000 on 2006. You received $3,500 in 2007, which you pay tax. So effectively, you got your deduction through deducting a higher amount than what you included in income in 2007.
Sure. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Bill in Oconomowoc will turn to you next. Hi, Bill.
Hello. I have a question. My son's received a payable upon death savings account, and I was wondering if that is taxable.
The principal amount is tax-free, but if there was any accrued interest, that would be taxable. So let's say there was $1,000 of, let's say it's $10,000, and there was accrued interest at death that hadn't been credited and the decedent didn't pay tax on of $100. The $100 would be reportable by your son.
The interest that he earned after the estate is his responsibility.
No. Of course, the interest earned after he receives it is his responsibility. But the interest that accrued before death but wasn't reported on the income tax return of the decedent is taxable to your son.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Bob in Darlington, it's your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
That's a really good show.
Thanks.
And good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
My wife and I have both been retired for quite a few years, and we itemize. And we've been paying estimated taxes for quite a few years. And we're in our middle 70s. And we pay taxes every year. And I was wondering what kind of a rebate we were going to receive this year from the government.
Okay. If on your 2007 income tax return, you have a tax liability of at least $1,200.
Uh-huh.
And your adjusted gross income is less than $150,000.
Uh-huh.
You'll get a rebate of $1,200.
Oh, that's what I thought. And it is exactly that. It's just under the 150.
Okay.
And what was that first statement you said?
The rebate is the lesser of $1,200 on a joint return or your 2007 tax liability. So if your liability was more than $1,200, then the max you're going to get is $1,200.
Oh, I think that our liability was more than that.
So if it was,
through the whole year?
Yeah.
Paying our estimated tax.
So it would be, I'm talking about the total tax that would appear on your tax return.
Mm-hmm. So if your income is, your gross income, adjusted gross income is over $150,000.
Then the rebate gets phased out at a 5% rate.
5% rate. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thanks, Bob, for calling. Appreciate it. John in Racine, it is your turn. Hi, John.
Hello. My father passed away last year, and he had a trust set up a number of years ago, and it appears he was filing returns for the trust and himself as his own personal return.
Mm-hmm.
And now with his death, I have to file, the final statements and stuff. Do I need to amend all those returns where he didn't file for the trust separately?
Likely not. It sounds like it was probably correct. A lot of people will put, as they get older, put their assets in a revocable living trust, all right, just as a way mm-hmm. to manage the assets, and then they have dispositive provisions that take over at death. But from a tax perspective, when a grantor, a person, place assets in a trust and retains the right to use those trusts funds and take the money out and deal with it, it's what's called a grantor trust. From an income tax perspective, it's like the trust didn't exist. The income and deductions and gains and losses of the trust are reported directly on the income tax return of the grantor, the person that put the funds in the trust. Then at death, as you indicated, the status of the trust changes. It comes into being as its own tax entity, and then at that time you need to start filing a Form 1041, an income tax return for the trust.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. And Bonita in Muscadet, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi. In 2007, I had a Power Index Certificate CD mature through Anchor Bank. This interest was estimated each year. They estimated it at 4.83% APY, but actual return was 2.003%. Therefore, I paid on more interest than what I actually got. Anchor sent me a letter telling me that the 1099 OID does not allow for negative amounts. And therefore, as a result, I had paid interest on $614.97 that I never received interest for.
Okay.
How would you handle that on a 1040A or the Wisconsin A1A?
So when was the interest reported to you?
I actually got an interest statement each year from 2004.
Because it was a longer
term.
Or
2002, because it was an estimated amount of interest. But the actual maturity date was 2007. That's when they actually said, okay, for the last 5 years, this is the amount of interest you did receive on this, which was far less than what they had.
So it was half about.
Right.
So you were reporting.
Well, let me ask you this. Were the statements erroneous? Do they just need to be corrected?
They were.
Well, no. What they said was when I opened this CD, it was based on the S&P, the interest. And each year, 2002, 2003, 2004, I received from Anchor Bank stating this is the amount of interest that we're estimating this CD
will pay
is yielding, but they actually did not know the exact amount until it was matured in 2007.
I see.
Okay.
So, and then what did they report on the 2007 1099?
Two percent.
They tell me that they can't because they don't allow negative amounts of interest.
Yeah. Okay. I've never had that situation, so I have not looked at it. Obviously, you've reported more income than you've earned, and it certainly seems a deduction should be in order. But relative to that particular instrument, I have not had one such as that, so I have not looked at that myself. So
it's one we can't help you with.
Yeah.
You're going to have to probably sit down with somebody and take a look at it and, you know, really kind of dig into it and see what's going to happen.
But, you know, there's a kind of a, what's called a claim of right doctrine where you report income where you think you're supposed to report it, but then it turns out not to be there. And under that doctrine, there's actually a code section that deals with that as well. It's 1341. Then when it pans out not to be the case, then you take a deduction when it doesn't pan out. And then if the amount that doesn't pan out is more than $3,000, you can actually go back in some of the earlier years and recompute. But your situation isn't exactly like that. So
yeah.
It's just not one that I've dealt with. So you'll need to have someone do a little homework on that one to properly advise you.
All right. Good luck, Bonita.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And Ron in Newburg, it's your turn. Hi, Ron.
Yes, good afternoon. On this new tax law for 2008, where people with low income do not have to pay capital gains if they have less than $32,000 income. Now, I will have earned income of less than $200. The rest will be coming out of my IRA and my investments. And I would like to run that all the way up to $31,000 of reportable income capital gains so I maximize the amount of my capital gains that are not taxable. Is there any big loophole or problem with that that I have to be careful and watch for? Because that's not written up in the 2007 tax form.
Right. But just basically, if you're in the less than the in the 15% bracket or less, then you'll pay zero tax on qualifying dividends and long-term capital gains. And that's the concept that you're talking about. And, you know, it's just a matter of going through the calculations to make sure that you don't have more income than you should have to knock you out. Now, the funds coming out of the IRA...
are taxable.
Yes, that's going to be ordinary income, right?
Right. Right. But so that total... I would like to. I'll have to watch carefully. So by the end of the year, it ends up as say $31,500 or something
yes,
like that.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
And that's taxable income, right?
You're right. Right. You're, right. Mm-hmm. That will all be taxable. So the 15% bracket, as I understand, for a single person is $32,000.
Right. Yeah. The 07 amount I have is $31,850. That is indexed for a few percentage points on inflation, so it'll be roughly $32,000 for a single taxpayer, roughly $64,000 for a married couple filing jointly.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. But there's no big problem that you didn't understand this and therefore you can't take that.
No.
It's simply written.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's correct. There is one little change in the tax law. It's not going to impact you, but the kiddie tax, where we thought we had some children that would be eligible for that rule starting in 2008, they just changed the kiddie tax. So now instead of, it used to be 14, now it's 18 for 2007. Well, starting with 2008, it's age 24 if you're dependent on your parents' return are still hit with a kiddie tax. So some of those children we thought would take the benefit of this when this was first enacted, if they're claimed as dependents by their parents, are not going to see the 0% rate.
Mm.
Okay, so thank you so much, because I want to start doing this already, and I want to make sure at the end of the year I'm okay.
Yep.
That's good planning.
Very good. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Rex and Madison, quick question from you.
Yes, I attended a truck driver training academy here in Wisconsin last December.
Yes.
And I paid approximately $2,500 in tuition and fees, and in reading the Form 1040 forms, it appears can I take that money as either a tuition and fee deduction or educational credits? I called the training academy, and the person there on the phone told me that they were an eligible educational institution.
Okay. All right. So can that, if they're an eligible educational institution, I would expect...
Yeah, if you meet the definition of tuition and fees, then it sounds like if your income is low enough, you'd be eligible. Whether that particular school meets that requirement, I don't know. But if you get the Form 8917 and the instructions relating to that, you might get a 1098-T that would help you indicate that amount as well. But... So get the instructions and see whether this institution is eligible for that.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. And Steve, thank you.
You're welcome.
You'll be back in a month or so?
Yes, indeed.
All right. Steve Schmidt, certified public accountant and managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. We'll have him back in a month and we'll do this again. Tomorrow we'll talk about rehabilitating raptors with Marge Gibson and then climate change. Stay with us. Lots in store.